Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you're listening to us right now, chances are you're a regular NPR listener and are familiar with the voice of Paula Poundstone. For years, Poundstone has been a regular panelist on the weekly NPR news quiz, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but she's been an influential voice on the American comedy scene well before that. Poundstone is also known for her HBO specials of the 1980s. She was the first woman to host the White House Correspondents' Dinner and has just about endless stand-up credentials. Now, podcaster is also included in Poundstone's resume. She's currently the host of the Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone podcast, which is sort of a comedy field guide to life. She continues to tour and do stand-up, and that's what will bring her to Milwaukee this Saturday when she performs at the Pabst Theater. Poundstone joins me by phone ahead of her trip to Wisconsin. Paula Poundstone, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So when we last spoke a few years ago, you and Adam Felber were just beginning to develop the Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone podcast. So how have you found this second round of podcasting since you had to change course from the NPR podcast?
Great. It's really fun. We had before been making a podcast called Live from the Poundstone Institute, and it basically was just too expensive. And so so we're making a really cheap podcast.
Sure.
In every way. And it's really been fun. You know, I think the reason that podcasting is popular is that there are no suits. You just say what you feel like, and, you know, it's throwing spaghetti up against the wall. I mean, obviously there are different kinds, but in terms of comedy podcasts, we just do stuff that we think might be funny. And we sort of amuse ourselves. And that seems to be working out pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know about you working on Wait, Wait, but for me, working at a local NPR station all day, when I go home and when I listen to a podcast or something, I want something completely different from what I'm exposed to all day.
Oh, well, I see. Okay, maybe we are the same, because when I come home from making jokes, I want hardcore investigative jokes. So it is the same. But, yeah, I mean, we tape on Tuesday nights, and you know what? Yeah, I think I drive an hour and a half to get there because it's closer to my partner's. It's a night that I look forward to all week because it's a night of healing laughter.
That's true, and we all need a little bit of that.
Oh, man, do we.
As you've been in this podcast for a little while now, what's one of the most memorable episodes or guests or perhaps lessons that has stuck with you so far?
Well, I think it was either our third or fourth episode. Ours is a comedy podcast, but there is some real information shared. And generally speaking, so we'll interview, in the early episodes, we interviewed two guests, and now we just do one. But, you know, it'll be somebody who has information on something that I either needed to know about because of something going on in my regular life, like mold on my closet ceiling, or just something that I wanted to know. So I wanted to know what you're supposed to do when you encounter a bear. And so our producer, Tony Needlehull, got in touch with a guy that was a survivalist. And he was going to come on and explain what to do when you encounter a bear. So she had gotten this guy, and his name was Thomas Coyne. So we couldn't help but notice in the beginning of the evening when the guests are supposed to arrive, Thomas Coyne didn't show up. And then we thought, well, we'll just go ahead and we'll move our second guest first, and we'll just go ahead and keep going with the show. And then he never showed up. And so we decided that we would just have the producers in the room Google what to do when you encounter a bear. And by the way, it depends what kind of bear. But ever since then, we have had listeners writing in on our Facebook page, and we have an interactive map, and they can put a pin where he isn't. They're looking for Thomas Coyne, and when they find an area that is clear of Thomas Coyne, they post this on the map. And in this way, I know that I will find him.
No word from Thomas Coyne yet, though?
No. We just got such a kick out of the idea that our survivalist didn't survive.
Yeah.
long enough to make. But anyways, that one was memorable.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really fun coming up with, I don't know, like we have a few sort of running things. We have On This Day, An Unremarkable History, quotes that may or may not have been said by famous people. And at the end of the show, I usually give, because, you know, the hardest thing is growing your audience, because that's how you make it possible to keep it going. And so we're always encouraging the audience to tell friends and loved ones that they are, nobody listens to Paula Poundstone listeners. And so at the end of the show, I usually have crafted a simple sample dialogue for the audience to know how to talk to a friend about the fact that they listen to, nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. And one of my favorites, the listener was in this dialogue, the listener was talking to her friend, and her friend believed that she was related to Barbara Streisand because she had found it on her 23andMe, she thought, and would occasionally just burst into, you know, Papa, can you hear me? And that was one of my favorites.
Well, and you mentioned that always is a struggle to grow your audience no matter what platform. So,
right.
You know, once you do get to, quote, a successful point that you deem, would you change the name of your podcast to Everyone Listens to Paula Poundstone?
No. actually, you know, it's funny. I didn't start this. Listeners did, which is people used to say to me, they go, well, I listen to Paula Poundstone, so I must be a nobody.
Okay.
And now the fans of our podcast call themselves nobodies.
I like that.
Yeah, and we're always trying to get Tom Hanks and Bryan Cranston to come on the show. At one point, Bryan Cranston was just about to come on, but there was a sloth in his chair, and we were told by one of the recording engineers who brings these animals to the studio that sloths don't like to be moved, and so we weren't able to have Bryan Cranston. We've been this close so many times.
Hopefully it comes to fruition one day.
And
that would be amazing.
Same thing with Tom Hanks. Nicest guy in show business. He has such a list of demands to be on our show. I think a lot of it happened when he got wind that he was going to be,
The Golden Globes.
Golden Globes, yeah. When he knew he was going to get lifetime achievement from the Golden Globes, he insisted that I have Botox injections in my lips or he won't come.
Well, and with your podcast, it's, you know, quote, using comedic sensibilities to help navigate life in the 21st century. And as we touched upon, everyone is in need of jokes and a good laugh. And I'm curious, how do you practice your own self-care as a comic in this day and age? Is your work your self-care, your release?
You know, it's a big part of it. I wasn't all that analytical one way or the other about what I do until I began writing a book several years ago. That came out a couple years ago, called The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, where I decided that I would do experiments doing things that I or other people had always believed would make me happy. The book's number one goal is to be funny, but the experiments themselves were quite sincere. And I learned a lot while I was doing it. Every chapter is written as an experiment with the hypothesis of the conditions and the field notes and the qualitative and quantitative observations, but the analysis part was checking in on how my regular life is going, which at the time was raising a house full of kids and animals, being a stand-up comic, and just being stuck being me 24 hours a day. But again, the experiments themselves were quite sincere, and one of the things, the first experiment was the Get Fit experiment. So I found like a workout guy, and he taught Taekwondo and self-defense. By the way, I have no passion whatsoever for Taekwondo or self-defense. I just chose him because he was the closest workout guy to my house, and I always tell people I wanted to get fit, but I didn't want to have to walk that far to do it.
Exactly.
So I have to say, I really did find that experiment went on for 7 months. You know, I lost a few pounds. I developed some muscle where I didn't have it before, and twanged some muscles that I already did have. And guess what? You do feel better. You do feel better when you're physically active. My goal in doing that experiment was to debunk that myth. I was so hoping that the answer was sitting in a chair and eating Doritos, because I'm much better at that. But in fact, physical activity really does help. I hate to say it. It kills me to say it.
Well, sometimes it makes the Doritos taste a little better, too.
Yeah, because you feel like you deserve them.
Yes.
I'm sure. Again, while I was writing it, and it's funny because my editor kept saying to me, she kept going, well, the audience isn't going to understand why you stopped working out if you found it was effective. And I said, for science, because to isolate the variables, I couldn't continue while I moved to the next experiment. But so given that the book took like 7 years to write, I stopped working out during the course of the rest of the time that I was writing the book. And then as soon as I was done, I went back. And I can say definitively that enough Three Musketeers bars offsets any weight loss you get from working out, but you still do feel better. So I continue that. I also like to volunteer so that I feel like, I don't know, I'm doing something. Even if you're lying to yourself, I feel like I'm doing something.
Distracting your mind for a little bit.
Honestly, it is. It is. You know, sometimes you do something that's outside of yourself, and it's just better for you. You know, for a few minutes, I forget about my petty problems, and I go involve myself in someone else's petty problems.
Yes.
But I had that one. That experiment I did towards the end of the book. It was called the Get Up and Help experiment, and I started volunteering at a nursing home. And that one I didn't quit when I went on to the next chapter because there just felt like after 3 months I had what I needed in terms of writing my book. But it just didn't feel like the right dynamic to go, okay, got what I need, see ya. So I've been there ever since, and I think that's like 3.5 years now.
Excellent.
I'm a master of jigsaw puzzles.
There we go. Learning new skills in any setting.
That's right.
Yes. All of these new things you've been trying, whether it's for a book, podcasting, your role as an NPR contributor for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And throughout all this, comedy, of course, is an ever-changing subject. Things in the news change to speak or comment on. But your delivery and your overall brand has been very consistent over all these years. So I'm curious, what has kept you in this role? You know, what keeps you caring about comedy?
It's just so much fun. You know, it really is the best thing for you. The first sentence of the last paragraph of the summary letter written about my work as a kindergartner by my kindergarten teacher in May of 1965. They used to write a letter in lieu of report cards for kindergarten back then. But the first sentence of the last paragraph written by Mrs. Bump says, "I have enjoyed many of Paula's humorous comments about our activities." And, you know, I saved that letter all these years. Eventually, I had it blown up and framed. And, well, two things. One thing, Mrs. Bump was a great educator. She figured out that you find a positive attribute and bring it up. I mean, the truth is, if she had said, you know, boy, she has, if she had said she, you know, she has really muscular thighs, then I'd be like a weightlifter now. It was just so nice to have an adult recognize something. I think, but the other thing is I grew up just loving the sound of laughter. I remember one night I was camping with my family and some friends of ours, and in the morning we get out of, we come out of our tents and we're all reviewing how we slept the night before the way you do when you camp. And my friend was angry because people behind us were up laughing and making noise all night. And I had the entirely opposite reaction. I said, really? I loved that sound. I fell asleep listening to laughter. What could be better? I mean, not if they were laughing at me, if I was like drooling or something and they were mocking me. Well, maybe that wouldn't be pleasant, like on an airplane. But I love the sound of laughter. And, you know, I would love it if people came to see me work. I think they would have a good time. But if not me, somebody or some live entertainment. Or where you're with a group. One of the things that's come into our lives are these, you know, screen devices that people type stuff like LOL. LOL is a lie every time it's written. If you're by yourself and you look at a video or a picture or a tweet, you do not laugh out loud. You may acknowledge in your head that you think it's funny, for sure, but you don't have like a belly laugh. Whereas when you're with a group of people, and it can be people that you know or people that you don't know, like an audience, that shared laughter or that shared emotional response, whatever it is, just does something in our brains. It releases a happy chemical, and it's just so good for you. And also, I think the thing about comedy specifically is that I share a lot of stuff about raising my kids or about, you know, struggling with, you know, whatever my mental health problem du jour, or, you know, driving the car or getting lost or whatever it is. And I think one of the things that makes people laugh is that they're like, oh, my gosh, I did that. Or, oh, my gosh, I had that. You know what I mean? And it makes you feel, as opposed to when you go through some of those experiences and you think, oh, I'm the only one. I must be such a jerk. You know, you feel like, oh, I'm part of a whole. This is part of the human condition. And it's really funny when you laugh about it as a group.
Well, Paula Poundstone, thank you for helping to facilitate some of those laughs all these years.
Well, thank you so much. It was nice talking with you.
You as well.
All right, take care.
Paula Poundstone is a humorous author and comedian. She is also a frequent panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and the host of the Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone podcast. She'll be in Milwaukee this Saturday to perform stand-up at the Pabst Theater.